So I think we kind of start the meeting officially. Good evening and welcome to our April 27th City of Bellevue's Planning Commission meeting. This evening's meeting and future meetings will be held remotely via Zoom. We don't know for how long. Some housekeeping before we start. Tonight, we have an opportunity for public comments during oral communication portion of the agenda. All written comments that have been submitted prior to 5:30 p.m. will be summarized into the record. Following presentation by our amazing staff this evening to facilitate discussion with the commission, I will call upon each commissioner in attendance individually to allow for questions and provide input. Let's just do a quick roll call. Vice Chair Ferris.
I am here.
Commissioner Bargava. I assume he's here.
Yeah.
Commissioner Brown.
Here.
Commissioner Gopal.
Here.
Commissioner Mugafkar.
Here.
And Commissioner Morso, I still don't see her. Am I right?
She just joined us.
Perfect. So let us see her verbal confirmation. Commissioner Morso, can you hear us?
Here, Chair.
Great. On time. And Council Member Robertson is going to join us a bit later. Tara?
That's correct, yes. She's running a little late today.
Can I get a motion to approve today's agenda?
So moved.
Second.
It is moved by Commissioner Gopal and second by Commissioner Brown to approve today's meeting agenda. Is there any discussion? All approved, say yes.
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 All opposed, say no. Any abstained? I think everyone said yes, so the ayes have it and our agenda has been approved. Report of City Councils. Councilmember Robertson, welcome. And you are on the hot seat immediately after joining. Do you have any updates for us?
I do. Good to be with you guys again. Looking forward to being together in person when we start that up for you all. It's been really wonderful that the council's been back in person the last 2 weeks. Monday night, we kicked off something that is going to be coming your way shortly, and that is the Wilburton comp plan and zoning update. I think you're scheduled in next month to have a briefing on it. That is a large area where the Citizen Advisory Committee in 2018 completed work on some scenarios for upzoning that area to create a even more walkable urban village, which will be integrated with the East Trail with and with all the other resources near their light rail transit, et cetera. The council gave direction to the staff to bring that to you using the Citizen Advisory Committee's preferred alternative as the baseline, and then to have the Planning Commission look at that in the context of changes that have happened since 2018, including how it will integrate with walkability, light rail transit, East Trail, how we may need to update the preferred alternative to take into account the housing needs, including affordable housing, how and to take into account our growth targets, to take into account the work that's been brought forward on the Grand Connection, how that will integrate with that. I don't have my notes from Monday, and I literally walked in the house, walked to my computer, and turned it on because I just got home from work. So I'm trying to stay focused on exactly what the mayor also wanted you guys to look at universal design. Sustainability and equity are also on the list. And if I've forgotten anything, I'm sure staff will tell you, we definitely had a scope for you. And the council is very eager to see this work proceed in a very comprehensive manner, but in a efficient and quick manner. with outreach and good work, and that's why the council directed that the starting place be the CAC's preferred alternative. Happy to answer questions about that, but that's the big news, I guess, for all of you. That work is coming your way, and it will be looked at, and the expectation is the Wilburton update will be delivered ahead of the finalization of the major comp plan update, because the two plans will work together. So really excited about that. Council is ready to see your work, and we're going to be continuing to be updated regularly through the process. If we need to send additional input to the Planning Commission, we will do so. But you guys should expect a busy couple of years ahead, doing really important work. And I would just give you some inspiration about how meaningful I found that work to be when I was a planning commissioner, doing the first Wilburton update, doing the first Bell Red update, some of the downtown plan updates, and seeing how all that hard work is paying off as the city is growing. So I know you guys will enjoy the work and see the satisfaction in the years ahead. So that's my report.
Thank you for update and good news. Any questions for Councilman Robertson before we move to the staff report? Vice Chair Ferris, please.
Just a quick question. You talked about the update to the Wilburton plan. Is there a target date when our review is supposed to be completed?
Yes, you'll be briefed on that. The total work, because it's the comp plan update followed by the land use code update, and those are going to both overlap. I believe the plan is about a 28 to 30 month process. The council's hoping, fingers crossed, that we can have everything wrapped by the end of 2023. So shortening it up a little bit, that may not, or maybe it's a 24 month process. The first quarter 2024, I think, is where it's estimated right now. But we're hoping it can go a little bit faster than that. There are target dates right now. The plan or the schedule is there's quarter targets. But one of the things that the council directed staff is to set actual drop dead hard deadline dates for all of the milestones in those two projects so that we can work to the deadlines and make sure that we can be faster than the due dates, but not slower, because this work has waited a long time. The CAC worked on it, I think, for 2 years, and I may be wrong about that. They completed it in 2018. So it's been sitting for 4 years, and there's a lot of pressure to make sure that we get the update going so that transit-oriented development and trail-oriented development can start proceeding to meet our housing and other growth targets as closely aligned with the opening of light rail as we can make it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from council member? Tara, do we have any other board or commissioner who wants to talk to us?
We do not.
Then the floor is yours. Please give us the staff reports.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Chair Malcucci and Vice Chair Ferris, Planning Commissioners, Councilmember Robertson, and members of the public. Included in your packet this evening, staff has provided a tentative agenda for the next few months, so through the end of July, which precedes, of course, your August break. So we'll just run through those. Councilmember Robertson already spoke about Wilburton, which City Council launched on Monday night. And so you'll note in your schedule, we've just said pending council initiation. So since council did launch the effort, staff will be coming before you in your first meeting in May and providing you with a pretty detailed overview, very similar presentation to what was provided to council. We'll be talking a lot, I think, to answer some of your questions. Maybe we'll go into a little bit more detail on the schedule. I'll relay that back to staff that there's an interest in talking about how the two efforts align, the comprehensive plan update and then the Wilburton effort, so you get a better idea of what the milestones are looking like. The second meeting in May, we're still determining what we'll be bringing forward. June, of course, we have our, as per your bylaws, we're going to be doing selecting a new chair and vice chair. So we'll be doing that in early June. Following that, we'll be doing a briefing on the periodic update, provide you with an overview of all the feedback we've heard from the community through our various visioning efforts. And then potentially we'll be doing a briefing also on draft vision update. Following that, we'll probably be doing a briefing with City Council right around that same time. So touching all the boards and commissions and City Council. In the latter part of June, we'll be talking more about the curbside management comp plan amendment, which staff introduced and briefed the commission on a few months ago. And then again, pending council launch, phase two of the C1 map amendments and policy amendments will be brought forward to Planning Commission. In July, we're anticipating coming to the commission and doing an overview on the EIS process that relates to both the comprehensive plan periodic update, as well as other efforts like the Wilburton effort, and then potentially even the Bell-Red look forward, as we're calling it. And then the last meeting in July, we should have information back from our consultants on an updated, at least some preliminary data on our updated housing needs numbers. So we'll be providing the commission with a presentation. So lots of exciting things ahead in the next few months. With that, I'll pause and see if you have any questions.
Thank you so much for the update. Any questions for Tara? Please raise your hand virtually or in real life. Commissioner Morse.
Are you seeing the raised hand? Because I did raise my hand using the button, but I didn't hear you.
Oh, I didn't see. Sorry, I missed.
No worries. So, Tara, in light of council now initiating the Wilburton implementation process, it looks like staff was maybe aware of this coming our way for this year agenda. How do you anticipate that impacting our schedule, not through July as you just did, but for the balance of the year when we come back after our break in August?
I think we anticipated that Wilburton would be part of this year's work program. So that was being planned for. I do think there's going to be opportunity, enough bandwidth for the Planning Commission. A good portion, I think, of this remainder of this year, and I'll let staff that's working on the Wilburton effort provide you with more detail on what the first phase of their work is going to look like. A good portion of the comp plan update is going to be very focused on community engagement. And then also working on some of the technical pieces that tie into our EIS process, which will be common to both Wilburton and a periodic update. So there's going to be a lot of staff work that's ongoing in the first, in the majority of this year. We anticipate there'll be Planning Commission briefings in the fall of this year on both efforts, but we haven't pinned down exact dates yet.
Thank you. So what I'm hearing, we don't really anticipate this new topic to impact our schedule for the balance of the year too much, because staff has somewhat already planned for it.
Not at this point.
Thank you, Tara. Thank you, Chair.
Of course. Any other questions? I don't see any hand. Tara, is there anything left that you do want to talk to us about, or should we just go to the oral communication part of the agenda?
I had one more announcement, and before we started the meeting, I was talking with some of the other commissioners. So just wanted to make this formal announcement to the commission. We are having our first in-person open house with the community relating to the comprehensive plan update on May 7th. That's going to be at Stevenson Elementary. I'll be following up with forwarding you a flyer officially. But just so that you know, it's an open house, so it's a 3-hour event. So it's just drop in, get information on what the entire process looks like. You'll have an opportunity to see and hear feedback from other community members that are attending. And then, of course, this is also an opportunity for you to spread the word yourself with people you know, community members, residents, neighbors, people you interact with, and encourage them to attend this event so we can hear from everyone in the community. And I see Commissioner Gappel's hand raised.
Yeah. I was just going to ask about the bylaws and about whether that was something that we were still going to be talking about as well, possible amendments to the bylaws, because I think that had been on our schedule earlier, but it looks like it fell off.
Yes, and I think we had talked about it previously as well. We've taken it off in anticipation of some of the hybrid hybrid provisions needing to be worked into the bylaws. So rather than go through two separate sets of amendments, our thought was come back to the Planning Commission with one set of amendments. As you know, that was on the council agenda on Monday night, and we're still waiting for precise direction. Matt, I don't know if you had anything additional you wanted to add there.
No, that's what I was going to say, and Councilmember Robertson can chime in as well, but just like we mentioned the last time about the bylaws, a number of the bylaws that we're going to be revisiting have to do with remote participation, because those are the bylaws as well. And the question of the appropriate amount of remote participation, if any, was one of the council agenda items on Monday, but we are still waiting for direction from the city council, not only for the Planning Commission, but for all the boards and commissions in the city. So
okay.
I apologize that we don't have a agenda date yet for that. But when council gives us direction, we'll certainly come back. And I think I mentioned the last time we spoke about it, I've already incorporated the bylaw amendments that we talked about during the retreat that have nothing to do with remote participation. And mm-hmm. I flagged the remote participation bylaw items. I'm just waiting for the council direction so that we can keep those consistent with council's direction too. So we will certainly let you know. And I think that item also, Commissioner Gappel, will be something that we could fit into an agenda as an item, even if it's not on our current plan for a specific date. I think that the commission could probably handle that in addition to other items on the agenda too.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Commissioner Brown.
I also noticed there was a comprehensive plan engagement session as part of the neighborhood conference on May 14th. Is that like a full-on comp plan thing, or is that a separate subset?
It's related to the periodic update. We're using that as an opportunity, again, to do some more engagement. So it'll be kind of a brief, not as extensive as the neighborhood leadership gathering or some of our other presentations, but again, just an opportunity to really get feedback, especially focusing on the vision update component.
Awesome. Well, you know, I can't get enough comprehensive plan updates, so I signed up for it.
Any other questions for Para? Yes, Commissioner Morris.
I think both Matt and Tara mentioned that council is in the process of figuring out what our meetings are going to look like moving forward in terms of in-person and remote participation. Is part of this process talking to the commissions to get a sense of what the commissioners would be comfortable with, because I think that would be a helpful exercise, because this is a different environment for all of us, and obviously we want to have an equitable way to allow all of us to show up and do our job properly. So I'm just curious about that.
So as far as I'm aware, the council has discussed the issue at least two meetings. And I believe that it will require an ordinance to amend the city code wherever council lands with that. I haven't been the assigned attorney for that agenda item, but I believe it's been a council discussion without any other outreach to the boards and commissions. But Councilmember Robertson can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that it's been on two different council agenda items, and they've debated it both at Monday's meeting and at a previous meeting as well.
Councilmember Robertson, do you want to add anything to what Matt said?
I just wanted to say I agree with everything that Matt said. The council is debating it. We had a very robust discussion on Monday night, and we've asked staff to go back and try to find a revised version of the draft ordinance to make sure that we are meeting the needs of the commission, of making sure that we keep in mind the people's need who may have need of accommodation, as well as making sure that we make sure that the boards and commissions are operating really efficiently in a way that makes them work well together and with the staff and with the public. So that's kind of a fine balance. And right now it's been a whole new world with Zoom. But I have to tell you, I love Zoom meetings. Being back in person is so much better in my perspective. So we're working on it. The policy, you will know when we make a decision. Thanks.
And Commissioner Morso, I would point out too that equity issues have been part of that council discussion, including on Monday as well. So that has been part of the public discussion in the council meetings too.
Commissioner Morso, do you have any follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Matt, and thank you, Councilmember Robertson. I, as much as I love being in person, I'm a people person. Matt and I were in our event together over the weekend. We hadn't seen each other in years. I mean, we were hugging, and I do get that. I love that environment. The fact is, I think it'd be useful to talk to the commissioners and see what would work best for him, for them. I, for myself, can say, as much as I love being in person, it's not an option for me because my husband is high risk. And with no mask mandate, it makes it very difficult for me to be in a room, not just with my fellow commissioners, which I love being in a room with them, but the public also showing up. So I think it would be very helpful to take that into consideration as the council and staff are making the decision, because some of us just don't have the luxury to be in person as much as we want to be there in person. Thank you.
Thank you for your input. Vice Chair Faith, I saw your hands up. Do you have any? Yes, go ahead.
Just one quick comment, and it was Commissioner Morso brought it up very well. I think it would be really informative for council to be able to get input from the various commissions. Just as Commissioner Morso said, she's in a position where it's going to be difficult. And, you know, I, for one, I know I'm going to be out of town a lot, and I've purposely arranged it so that I could dial in remotely. But obviously, if it's required in person, it would be difficult. So it just seems to me like it would be really informative to be able to get input from the various commissioners that are participating. And I also believe it's very much of an equity situation to be able to allow the most people that we possibly can to accommodate being able to participate.
I would say thank you. I hear you, and I appreciate the input. The concern that I'll be straight up, the concern I had was, as the draft ordinance was written, I could see a point where we'd have a commission meeting where there'd be one person in the room and three people on the phone. And to me, that does not work. So I'm a big proponent of having people be in person if they can, and occasionally be remote. So that's my position, but the council hasn't come up with a position, and we're going to have a uniform position for all the boards and commissions, and you will absolutely be informed of it when we have reached a decision. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Gopal.
Yeah, I guess I was just going to second what my fellow commissioners were saying. I like being in person too when I can, but I think the flexibility element is really an important thing, because I think you've got a lot of commissioners with very busy schedules, and people who have who are traveling for work or for other purposes. And if you want good participation, I'd really recommend to the council that you think about flexibility. You know, we're all adults, and I'm sure we'll do a good job in whatever format we utilize.
Thank you for all of your inputs. If there is any other questions, I think we can move on to oral communication. Perfect. So the total time for oral communications is 30 minutes. Speaker will be allowed up to 3 minutes to speak. Tara will call on speakers in order they have registered on web form registration site. If you miss that, don't worry. Just use the raise hand function in the Zoom, and hopefully I myself or Tara will see that and will call on you. So Tara, who do we have on the list, please?
We have five speakers signed up, but I do see the several members of the public that have signed on. So just wanting to keep track of time, we have a total of 30 minutes, so that would allow us a total of 10 speakers to provide public comment during this portion of public comment. So with that, the first person that signed up to speak is Ryan Merck. And then after that, we will go on to speakers that have not signed up. So with that, Ryan, I'm going to enable you to speak. You should be able to unmute yourself, and then give me a moment while I pull up the timer. Are you able to unmute yourself, Ryan?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Ready when you are. Thank you. Good evening, commissioners and Councilmember Robertson, thank you for the opportunity to address you tonight. My name is Ryan Merck, and I'm the program manager for permanent housing with Congregations for the Homeless. And I am also a Bellevue resident. I reside at 14824 Southeast 18th Place in Bellevue, Washington. Speaking tonight to just clarify some comments I made in an earlier planning commission and provide some insights into our experiences working with the homeless in Bellevue. As I mentioned earlier, CFH currently provides scattered site supportive housing for men experiencing homelessness throughout Bellevue. While our average men per home is 6, we think it would be a mistake to limit the occupancy to just 6 people, because sometimes we're able to house more than 6 people in a home, depending on the size of the home. Placing additional limits on the number of people who can occupy a residential home beyond that which already exists in the code would result in fewer people being housed at a time when each new housing unit costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. And we can't even come close to meeting that need of our unsheltered community. Every additional bedroom we can use means one more person sheltered, and on their path to stability. Further, as the only homeless service provider who has gone through Bellevue's CUP process to site and operate a permanent shelter, I am here on behalf of my colleagues to share a few facts about our experience. It took 17 months from the time we submitted our pre-application until we completed the process without any guarantee we would receive a permit at the end of the process. The steps to a CUP include a pre-application, multiple meetings with city staff, formation of a good neighbor agreement advisory committee requiring the city council involvement multiple public meetings, which must conform to the Open Public Meetings Act, and finish with either a hearing examiner or a city council public hearing before a decision is rendered. CFH has learned a lot through the experiences, and this experience in particular, and we do believe that through the community conversations we hosted ourselves and those facilitated by the city, we now have a stronger relationship with the Bellevue Police, city staff, and future neighbors. We also believe that these positive outcomes can be achieved without going through the very structured, costly, and lengthy CUP process, which is why we strongly urge the Planning Commission to not add any additional housing types, homeless services, youth subject to 20.20.455 and subsequently a CUP. Thank you and have a great evening.
Thank you, Ryan, for your input.
The next speaker is Patricia Mahoney. I think this is her.
Hello, good evening, everybody. So my name is Patty Mahoney and I live in Bellevue.
Patricia, just give us a second till Tara bring the clock, please.
Okay.
Your time begins now.
Okay. So I would just like to say first, this is the first time I attend one of these meetings with the city council or city members or planning commission and all of it. And I am here because I am extremely concerned about the homeless shelters that are being placed in Bellevue. And I also want to point out something before I go into what I am here tonight to request. A few years ago, we were told that Bellevue was building this sound transit, or King County was building the sound transit, because we needed to provide the means for low-income people to come to work to Bellevue, because Bellevue was very, very, very expensive. So we all voted, many of us voted against it, but King County went ahead with the immense expense on sound transit. Now we have the sound transit, and now we are building immense amounts of low-income housing right here in Bellevue. And now we are also being told that we need to build or provide homeless shelters. So to me, as a resident, it does not make any sense, because if the plan was to build low-income housing everywhere in Bellevue and provide homeless shelters in Bellevue, why did we spend billions of dollars in sound transit? Okay, so there is so much that I can say, and 3 minutes is not enough. I'm just going to go to the point. Number one, I would like, for the record, I would like to request a questions and answers meeting with the Bellevue City Council and the Planning Commission, so we can discuss openly the immense amount of low-income housing and homeless shelters in Bellevue. As I understand in my discussions with Mayor Robinson, this is a mandate that comes from King County. And I guess my question, if she was attending this meeting, would be, what did the city of Bellevue, what did the city council did to fight for Bellevue residents? Because as far as I am concerned, this is extremely dangerous for Bellevue residents. Look, I am all for helping people. Don't get me wrong. But I will never accept helping people at the risk of my own safety or my children or my family. Okay, so here is my next request. Tara, I hope you're recording this. I would like to request the city of Bellevue.
Patricia, sorry to interrupt you, but your 3 minutes is up.
Well, I wish I would have known that I only had 3 minutes before I sign up for this this session, because I am not even a chance of, I haven't said a chance of what I wanted to say, but I guess I have no other option than, I guess.
You may have a chance at the end to speak again.
Okay, I will wait then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Lee White, and I don't believe I see them here yet. So we'll come back. The next speaker is Ryan Donahue, who I do see. Ryan, you should be able to unmute yourself.
I believe I am unmuted, I hope.
You yes, are.
We can hear you. All right, Ryan, your time to go now.
Thank you. Hello, commissioners. It's wonderful to see you all again. My name is Ryan Donahue, and while I wear many hats, today I'm here in my role as co-chair of the Eastside Affordable Housing Coalition, representing 34 different organizations that provide affordable housing and human services to the residents of Bellevue and other Eastside cities. I'm here today to comment on the Supportive and Emergency Housing Use Land Code Amendment that is a part of today's study session. We strongly support the allowance of the permanent supportive and transitional housing in all land use districts where residential dwellings or hotels are allowed, and the allowance of emergency housing and shelters in all land use districts where there, which is why we thank this committee and the city staff for all the work that you are embarking on. We do, however, have a couple of comments that we would urge you to consider as you move forward. First, to set the table, we urge you to view this work with this LUCA through an equity lens. It is important, in fact, it is crucial that our most vulnerable community members are at the forefront of our decisions, the decisions you make today, particularly as it relates to the work on this particular LUCA. Many of our comments can honestly be summed up in one sentence. It's bad policy to limit housing capacity and options during a housing crisis. While the proposal is generally a good one, there are some opportunities here for improvement. The primary thing that the Eastside Affordable Housing Coalition would identify as a top concern is urging you to not add CUP requirements for emergency housing in districts that allow hotels. The short version, to sum up, is essentially this relevant state law, which is HB 1220 from 2021, does not allow cities to impose requirements that would restrict housing. Even if the city imposes well-intentioned requirements and restrictions, that risks putting the city in violation of state law, which I would urge, obviously, for you to try to avoid. There are a number of other things that we have provided in commentary. You can actually see a letter that we submitted earlier today that outlines our comments and thoughts around the proposed LUCA, raising these issues as well as a number of others. On behalf of all 34 of our organizations, I thank you for your work to ensure that Bellevue can provide the full range of housing options to residents experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity. We believe that this LUCA, along with a couple of modifications, will improve the comprehensive response to the ongoing housing crisis while continuing to be in compliance with state requirements. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I believe our last speaker, oh, I do see Lee White here now. So I'm going to enable Lee to speak.
Yep, Lee's here.
Thank you. Give me one moment while I pull up the timer. Time begins now.
Hey, Lee White, 15-year Bellevue resident. I like to say that I hope you exercise your rights to change the proposal to reflect the concerns heard from recent public comment about having permanent supportive housing and supportive housing for people working to avoid experiencing homelessness and people working to exit homelessness. House Bill 1220, which has been talked about, includes provisions for reasonable occupancy, spacing, and intensity of use requirements that may be imposed by ordinance on permanent supportive housing, transitional housing, and emergency housing to protect public health and safety. I, along with many others, are requesting the Planning Commission to adopt the following from existing Bellevue City Code 20.20.455 require the application to be a conditional use permit, require the standard operating procedure plan, include the code of conduct, provide the safety and security plan, require a good neighbor agreement advisor committee, and expand notice to include owners and real property owners within 1,000 feet of a proposed site. The homeless service uses land use code was developed with an extraordinary input from the public, providers, funders, and participants, as well as the city council and staff. It was developed with intensive input engaging the public, including residents and businesses, a citywide survey, community workshops, providers, participants, staff, council, and was approved by Bellevue City Council meeting criteria consistent with the comprehensive plan. It provides the enhancement for the homeless residents and public health, safety, and welfare, and it is not contrary to requirements put or not required, contrary to the best interests of citizens and property owners of the city of Bellevue. The lack of these requirements puts the vulnerable population at risk, and an unregulated environment poses hazards to the vulnerable population. Providers vary greatly and may change over time. Provider accountability and consistency is needed for the entire community. Those in the predicament of homelessness constitute a vulnerable population and includes histories with drug addiction, mental illness, and other disabilities. These populations have similar needs to those living in shelters and currently experiencing homelessness. Each of these populations have requirements so that providers offer consistency in care for those populations and the surrounding neighborhoods. The proposed housing deserves the same type of expectations and assurances of other vulnerable populations received through the City of Bellevue ordinances. The residential neighborhoods, too, deserve the similar regulation and assurances of provider services and operations and protections that are afforded commercial properties used for homeless shelters in Bellevue. Please include the residents of Bellevue as stakeholders, not the stakeholders you're talking to, which are commercial uses. Include the residences and consider adding requested conditions to protect public health and safety for all. Keep in mind, there are 140,000 plus residents in Bellevue, and you want to force these residents to accept a change to allow supportive housing in their neighborhoods without even consulting them. That should be your first and foremost job, is to consult with the 140,000 plus people. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Our last speaker that we have signed up is Chad. Chad, I'm going to enable you to speak. Are you able to unmute yourself, Chad?
Thanks. Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you, Chair. Members of the Commission, my name is Chad Vaculin with the Housing Development Consortium for HDC. HDC advocates, brokers, and convenes our 190 plus affordable housing sector member organizations who work collaboratively to meet the housing needs of people with limited incomes throughout our region. And we appreciate the Commission's diligence throughout this entire process and would also like to express our gratitude to city staff who have remained responsive and informative throughout this process. And we know that decisions like this aren't taken lightly by you. We also know that the impacts of any LUCA decision will be disproportionately felt by those who are most impacted by homelessness and by housing instability, including communities of color, people with disabilities, seniors, veterans, and members of the LGBTQ community. So as such, we would like to ask you to keep this in mind tonight and approach the LUCA decision from an equitable lens. And HDC strongly supports the allowance of permanent supportive and transitional housing where residential dwellings or hotels are allowed. And we also and the allowance of emergency housing and shelters where hotels are allowed. We believe that this LUCA really has the potential to improve Bellevue's response to ongoing housing crisis while also reaching compliance with state requirements. And we don't have enough time to go into each item in the modification table created by staff, so I urge you to reference the letter that HDC signed on to that was sent to the Planning Commission, but I do want to highlight just a couple of things. First, we recommend, first and foremost, of not adding a conditional use permitting requirement for emergency housing in districts that allow hotels. We recommend that the Planning Commission move forward with a process that can ensure that newer requirements, such as subjecting projects to a strenuous and costly CUP process, are not placed on desperately needed housing types. And we know by evidence and by experience and by history that the CUP process, however well-intentioned it may be, introduces exorbitant costs and creates long delays, as the previous speaker had mentioned. So adding new restrictions and requirements reduce access to services that members of our community desperately need. And a CUP is also discretionary, so there's no guarantee in an actual outcome of acquiring that permit. So this additional CUP requirement can effectively prohibit emergency housing, which is clearly not the intent of state law that this loop is in response to and in effect creates rather than removes barriers for this type of housing. Second, we are quite concerned about policies that limit housing capacity, and we believe that adding a buffer zone and limiting the number of bedrooms in single-family districts is a wrong approach during a prolonged housing crisis. And finally, we'd like to remind folks that residents of supportive housing facilities have to sign leases that dictate the terms of their tenancy, just like any other renter. And instituting additional resident code of conduct is unnecessary and further stigmatizes the community members that seek support. So thank you for-
Thank you so much, Chad.
Yep.
With that, that concludes our list of speakers that have signed up. I do see two hands raised, Simna and Mabel. Mm-hmm. Heidi Dean to speak.
Good evening.
Paula, do we need your address?
Yes, please. Heidi, if you could provide us your name, your address for the record, that would be greatly appreciated.
Sure thing. My address is 11661 Southeast 56th Street in Newport Hills. Good evening, commissioners and Councilmember Robertson. So I actually wanted to talk about the remote option that you're all discussing earlier. Hey, the pandemic and being able to do remote meetings has been great. I may or may not be wearing pants as I attend this meeting right now. So I have been able to attend a lot more city meetings as a result of this option. But as I listen to you talk and as I listen to the council discussion on Monday night, one thing has really jumped out at me, and there's a lot of concern for convenience for board and commission members and how things will work for you. But there's no talk about how it works for the public and your role as representatives of us being able to get a feel for what's important to us. Because I've been at, and I know Commissioner Morisseau, you have been at my rezone meetings, the public hearings for that, where people have packed the rooms. People had to show up to show their support. You literally have no way of gauging support for what people are saying. Like when I'm giving public comment, you can't tell if anybody's raising their hand to agree with me. I was agreeing with things that Mr. White was saying. I know Betsy Hummer will be speaking. I'm going to be agreeing with things that she says. You have no way of gauging that in a virtual format. So consider that, are you really doing the people's business when you can't tell what's going on? So I understand that there are some circumstances. Commissioner Morris, so you brought up that your husband is medically fragile and you were worried about that. But I heard traveling. Well, I've scheduled myself for travel and that sort of thing. I just need to remind you that if this pandemic hadn't happened and you had, signed up to be a commissioner, you would have been expected to be in person doing the people's work. So the fact that you've been allowed to be able to participate remotely during this time doesn't mean that it should go on forever. You're going to have a lot to do with the comp plan update. That is a heavy lift. And Commissioner Morris is the only one that saw that at the very end of it last time. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of public process. And we need you to be listening to us and have that mechanism of seeing what we're saying, what we're doing, and not just be closed off from us in a remote setting. Thank you very much for my considering what I have to say.
Thank you for your input.
And I believe we have Betsy Hummer would also like to speak.
Hey, I got the unmute button. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Oh, just okay. Give us a minute for the timer and okay. Also please tell your address.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the other guys tell their address.
I think they registered registered online, so they put their address already.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. Really
appreciate
it. Of course,
Betsy.
Yeah. Well, I'm Betsy Hummer, 14541 Southeast 26th Street, here in what's commonly called Lake Hills or East Bellevue. It's nice to see everyone back in person. I agree with Ms. Dean and Councilmember Robertson. I would love to see be in person. There's just so much that's missed just being online. So I'd like to address Chair Malakushin, Vice Chair Ferris, the commissioners, Councilmember Robertson, staff, and fellow members of the public. Thanks again for this good meeting, and thank you in advance for all of your work. I am still concerned about the permanent supportive housing on tonight's agenda. Reading over the packet, I was concerned reading that some speakers were against the land use code amendment. I took that to mean that that we were being put into two different camps, but I understand that there are some people opposed to it who don't really understand that it's state law that we have to that we have to obey. Right. But I do remember from the homeless services uses land use code, there people were cited as being for or against the land use code amendment. And that was never, ever true. Everyone understood that we had to pass that land use code amendment just like this one. And nobody was actually against it. They were for different parts of it anyway. So I misread that, and I sent out a letter and just kind of apologizing for that. Reading through the packet, I am disappointed that staff does not recommend the commission's proposed safety and security plans, code of conduct, standard operating procedures, community meetings, buffer and spacing requirements, and maximum bedrooms. And I agree with the other two speakers, Mr. White and Mr. Merck, that maximum bedrooms, I do agree with that, but I know that legally we cannot restrict the number of individuals that live in a home, right? Whether it's an apartment or a house. And I understand their concern about the conditional use permit. But I also talked with Mr. Merck, and the community meeting part of the shelter down here at Eastgate was better than they ever anticipated. So I am asking the commission to make sure the requirements you proposed are included in the land use code amendment. These will guarantee that participants will have similar standards that are required at shelters in the commercial areas. The requirements will also bring Bellevue's permanent supportive housing, LUCA, in line with those of Kirkland and Redmond. The other questions I had, I'm running out of time. So I hope the Planning Commission also attends the May 14th neighborhood meeting at City Hall. Thanks again for your hard work.
Thank you, Betsy. Paul, I don't see any other hand. So, perfect. Would you please give us a summary of the written communication?
Certainly. We did not receive any written communications prior to your packet being published, so you'll note that there were no communications incorporated there. Since then, which was Thursday of last week, we've received about 7 letters or emails, which were forwarded to you earlier today. So those were sent over via email around 3 o'clock, I believe, in the afternoon for your review. And staff may be going over some of those comments as part of their presentation. including the letter that was referenced during public comment from the East Side Roundtable.
So then I think we are all ready for study session if there is no other thing that we need to cover. Perfect. So we have two staff, Trizana and Caleb, that are going to provide a presentation on LUCA to establish regulations for permanent supportive housing, transitional housing, emergency housing, and emergency shelter. To facilitate discussion after they have completed their presentation, I will go around the room and ask you individually for questions or your input. So Teresna and Caleb, thank you so much. We are all yours. And I see Nick instead of Teresna, I guess. You guys always trick me here.
Apologies, Chair Malakushian. So I will be presenting this evening with Caleb Miller. And so thanks, Caleb, for getting that slide up. So my name is Nick. I'm the planning manager for the Code and Policy Division. I'm great to be here with you, Chair Malakushian, Vice Chair Ferris, Councilmember Robertson, and planning commissioners. We are returning tonight after the February 23rd study session on the support of an emergency housing land use code amendment, or LUCA, as we like to say. At the last study session on February 23rd, the Planning Commission did review and discuss various modifications to the LUCA and provided direction on several items, and then requested additional information responding to questions and some of the remaining potential modifications to the LUCA. So we've included the list of potential modifications and where they stand as of the last study session, with notes about which modifications were supported, not supported, and which were requested to return for discussion tonight. So that's the information about those modifications is in the agenda memo, as well as attachment C, which is titled Potential Modifications Table. And then as we noted, Caleb Miller is also joining this evening, Senior Planner in the Code and Policy Division. Next slide, please, Caleb. So tonight, we are seeking direction from the Planning Commission to recommend to City Council approval of the proposed LUCA. Next slide, please. So in terms of agenda, we would begin the staff presentation by recalling the LUCA approach, including the framework that was established to regulate the four housing types that are required by state law. We'll then provide a recap of those four housing types and the approval process proposed for each housing type. We'll cover the various modifications that are before the Planning Commission for consideration. We'll talk about the LUCA process and schedule, and then end the presentation with an overview of the decision criteria before seeking direction from the Planning Commission. Next slide, please. So to start on the presentation for the LUCA approach, this LUCA has been designed to respond to recent changes to state law, which became effective last year. So changes to RCW 35A21. 430. The law requires for cities to allow permanent supportive housing and transitional housing in all land use districts where residential or hotel-motel uses are allowed, and then indoor emergency housing and emergency shelter in all land use districts where hotel and motel uses are allowed. The law also allows for reasonable occupancy, spacing, and intensity of use requirements to be imposed on these housing types. Those are intended to protect public health and safety. And the law further mentions in regards to those limits that may be placed that in considering different limits for these housing types, we are unable to prohibit siting of these housing types or prevent the siting of a sufficient number of permanent supportive housing, transitional housing, indoor emergency housing, or indoor emergency shelters that are necessary to accommodate Bellevue's projected need for such housing and shelter. The law provides a definition for the four housing types, and per the Planning Commission's previous direction, supportive housing is considered a distinct use, and it's defined in the land use code amendment before you to include permanent supportive housing, as well as transitional housing and non-transient emergency housing. So this use is proposed to be regulated consistent with the city's historic regulatory scheme of treating supportive housing as a residential use. As this use, it's intended to provide more stable housing as compared to homeless services uses, which will have a much different impact. The LUCA approach is also consistent with the overall land use code approach, which differentiates transit and, transient and non-transient uses. So for example, non-transient housing types covered by law, they're allowed in more locations or in all land use districts where we allow for residential uses as well as hotel uses. And then transient housing and shelters such as emergency housing that provides housing to residents for a shorter duration, the way the code set up, it's fewer than 30 days. And then emergency shelters, those are required in land use districts where hotels are allowed. So by having the LUCA also distinguish, as the state laws distinguishes, between non-transient and transient, the staff feels that the proposed LUCA appropriately addresses the intensity of use that surrounds these four housing types. And the existing regulatory scheme for homeless services uses, which you did hear some commenters speak about, referencing Land Use Code 20.20.455, that is proposed to be used for emergency housing and emergency shelter, as these are more transient or short-term, which is akin to homeless services uses. And then, as we've stated in past meetings, supportive housing has historically been regulated as residential use in Bellevue and would largely be allowed outright with only needing to meet density limits, some dimensional standards, as well as design standards, depending on which land use district that the use is cited in. But it's treated as a residential project. With the supportive housing projects that we have in the city, we've received very few complaints for those pre-existing supportive housing locations, and then no code violations for those locations. So to be very clear, this LUCA has been set up with the understanding that the nature and character of supportive housing is different than the nature and character of transient emergency housing and emergency shelter or homeless services uses. And as mentioned, the state also provides that distinction in how those uses are allowed more broadly for permanent supportive housing and in fewer zones for emergency housing and emergency shelter uses. So next slide. With that, I will turn the presentation to Caleb Miller to walk us through the remaining slides.
Great. Thank you, Nick, and good evening, members of the Planning Commission and Councilmember Robertson. So Nick kind of touched on a lot of this already, but just as an overview, we've organized the LUCA, the four housing types in the RCW into two categories in this LUCA. The first is supportive housing and the second is homeless services uses. As Nick noted, this distinction is based on the duration of stay and intensity of use, which are quite different between the two. The duration of stay for supportive housing is anything 30 days or longer, and then homeless services uses, those would have less than 30-day durations of stay. As Nick also noted, state law has also distinguished between the four different categories based on the intensity and compatibility of certain land use districts. Just as an overview of the specific housing types, supportive housing includes permanent supportive, transitional, and non-transient emergency housing. Again, there are generally longer term durations of stay and have more personalized services offered to help people either stay housed permanently or to transition them into their own living arrangements eventually. Generally, these come in many different forms, but are overall meant to be stable homes for the residents who live there. Under the proposed LUCA, supportive housing is proposed to be a permitted use, but a registration requirement would apply to any more intensive supportive housing uses, as well as a notice. For homeless services uses, this would include transient emergency housing and emergency shelter. Emergency shelter, just to note, includes overnight shelters, day centers, and things of the nature, typically less than 24-hour duration to stay for those. The services for homeless under homeless services uses tend to be more generalized and more basic in nature. And these function more like hotels in that they're more transitory in nature, with people coming and going from the site at any time of the day. The homeless services uses are currently only allowed through the conditional use permit process. This is not proposed to change under this LUCA. The only proposed change is just to insert emergency housing transients into the homeless services uses category. So moving on, you've heard a lot tonight about the potential modifications. Here is a list of all of the modifications that have either been suggested by stakeholders or brought forward by staff following the public hearing. Our staff recommendation is the second most column to the right. And I'll just note that the general reasons for not recommending are that they're not consistent with our approach to the SLUCA up to this point, and that is to treat supportive housing as a residential use, as Nick noted. And then it's also not consistent with the land use code framework or the historic regulation of supportive housing in Bellevue. So those would be the reasons for our no recommendations generally. The Planning Commission did provide direction at its February 23rd meeting, and the directions noted on the rightmost column, with TBD meaning that we've been directed to bring those items back for further discussion tonight. And we are presenting all of them tonight just for the benefit of commissioners who are not present at the last meeting. So to zoom in on these a bit, these first four modifications are the ones suggested by supportive housing providers and other related stakeholders. The first two are minor clarification edits to the definitions for supportive housing and supportive services. The Planning Commission did support both of these on the February 23rd meeting, and staff does recommend the inclusion of these in the LUCA. Item 3A is to remove the distinction between transient and non-transient emergency housing. This one is not recommended by staff, and the Planning Commission did not support this on February 23rd. Removing this distinction, this distinction is pretty consistent with how residential uses in Bellevue are regulated. And we thought this was a good way to fit the four uses in the RCW within the framework of the land use code. Finally, item 3B would allow emergency housing as a permitted use in all hotel and hotel districts. I'll just note that non-transient emergency housing as a supportive housing use would already be permitted as proposed. That would not be subject to the conditional use permit. It is only transient emergency housing under the homeless services uses category that would require a CUP. And then staff, again, do not recommend this one because it is inconsistent with our general approach for this LUCA and the framework that of the land use code. The next set of modifications are a set of required submittal materials for supportive housing uses that are not exempt. These include a safety and security plan, which would just be plans for ensuring property and surroundings are secure and that there are protocols in the event of an emergency. Additionally, there's a resident code of conduct, and these are just general rules that apply to all residents. And then standard operating procedures, which is a detailed description of how these functions. This would include things like the number of residents, staff, the types of services provided, the hours they operate, and so on. Staff do not recommend these supplemental submittal requirements, as these are not historically required for supportive housing or any other residential use for that matter, and not consistent with the land use code framework for residential uses. Also note, these are requirements that were pulled from the homeless services uses section 20.20.455, but staff do not feel that the intensity of use with supportive housing merits the additional requirements that homeless services uses have. Planning Commission did support each of these, however, on February 23rd, with additional discussion to bring item 4B back for discussion tonight, and that is to have the Bellevue Police Department review and approve the safety and security plan. Again, this is a homeless services use requirement. It's not consistent with how we've regulated supportive housing in the past, and it's not in line with the approach that we've taken here. And the final three modifications are additional requirements. The first two, I'll note, are only applicable to those supportive housing uses that are not exempt. So these would be the more intense ones that I've noted. And number 9 would only apply in single-family districts. Number seven is a requirement for a community meeting. This is one that the Planning Commission did direct staff to bring back for discussion tonight. Staff does not recommend this particular item, as again, it's not currently required for supportive housing uses. That's inconsistent with our approach. Number eight is a minimum spacing requirement of a quarter mile between two supportive housing uses. This one was not recommended by staff and the Planning Commission did not support it on February 23rd. And number nine is a maximum number of bedrooms, totaling six for supportive housing uses in single family districts. Again, this is not consistent with our regulations for residential uses. So for example, we don't have limits on the number of bedrooms or occupants for a single family home. And as was noted in the comments, this would also limit the siting of supportive housing and the number of people who can be housed. The Planning Commission did, however, bring direct staff to bring this particular item back this evening. Moving on, here is just a quick overview of the LUCA process up to this point. We are on our fifth study session for this. And if the Planning Commission does make a recommendation tonight, we will go ahead and schedule the first study session with council. While we are getting a little bit close, we do anticipate completion of this LUCA by July. The interim controls in place expire on July 12th. And finally, just as a reminder for all of you, these are the LUCA decision criteria that apply to all land use code amendments. These may, the code states that the city may amend the land use code if it is consistent with the comprehensive plan, if it enhances the public health, safety, and welfare, and if it is not contrary to the best interests of citizens and property owners in Bellevue. And finally, if there are any modifications that the commission wishes to add to this LUCA, that can be done through individual motion. And with that, staff is seeking direction from the Planning Commission to recommend to the City Council approval of the proposed LUCA, and I will pass it back to the chair for questions.
Thank you so much for a great presentation and going with patience to all of the details, line by line, explain the history, what happened before, and what we need to do in this meeting, Caleb and Nick. Let's go around the room. I start with Commissioner Murso. Any questions, comment, input?
Thank you, Chair. Just a clarification from staff. For the one that requires the proposed conditional use permit, so that would be the initial application of the entity to get that supportive housing structure put in place. They don't have to do that every time, let's say they're going to, I'm verbal processing, I want to make sure that I ask the question properly. So that is only when they're initially trying to put that in place. Is that correct? That they need to go through this, to the CUP process? Not on an ongoing basis here.
That's correct, but I will just clarify that the CUP process as proposed right now would not apply to supportive housing. This is only for homeless services uses like shelters and the transient emergency housing. But to answer your question, yes, only one CUP application would be necessary in order for them to site there. They wouldn't need to redo it on a certain basis.
Okay. That's it for me for now, Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Gopal?
I had two questions for staff. The first question just has to do with the time period for conditional use permit. And I just wanted to confirm the time period that was required for the conditional use permit for congregations for the homeless, because my understanding was that it took 11 months, not 17 months, from the time that a notice of application was filed to the final hearing examiner decision. So I wanted to just confirm that factual point, you know, when it comes to the length of time that it takes to get a conditional use permit. And then the second piece has to do with the potential modification number 9, which relates to maximum bedrooms. And that's been something that, you know, I've been thinking about to deal with the intensity issues, potentially with supportive housing. And I just wanted to get some inputs from staff as to, you know, in the absence of that, what is there in the land use code that really helps to regulate intensity of usage? The only thing I could find in the markup was a sentence that says alterations to the interior or exterior of the structure which change its single family residential appearance or character shall not be permitted, except that any alterations to improve accessibility per the Americans with Disabilities Act shall be permitted. And I just have some ongoing concerns about, you know, the nature of that provision. And it seems to me to be somewhat subjective and unclear as to the extent to which it could help to, you know, mitigate intensity of usages such that, you know, the distinction that we're making in this LUCA between, you know, supportive housing and homeless services uses is really a reality. Because I think that distinction is really important for this overall framework. And I just want to make sure that it holds. And to me, I've been kind of holding on to that, you know, 6-bedroom limit as a means to get me over the hump in just really thinking about intensity of usage. So those are my two questions for staff.
Great. So with the first question related to the time frame, the kind of the factual or fact checking there, I can turn it to Matt. I do know anytime a CUP process is being undertaken, of course, the applicants do have a lot of pre-work that happens before they actually submit. And then the code actually does require a pre-application community meeting. So some of the time frames in terms of staff processing time versus what the applicant has to undergo can vary somewhat. Matt sure might have some more information to share on that front. And then we'll have Caleb respond to the second question about intensity of use.
Thanks, Nick. And that's correct. So the city's land use code has a conditional use permit process, which is available anytime that a conditional use permit is required. For homeless services uses, what the land use code requires is an enhanced conditional use permit process. It's not a standard conditional use permit because there's also requirements that come through that 2020-455 section, which regulates homeless services uses under the current code framework that is in front of the commission. That would be the emergency shelters and also the transient emergency housing. So just with that framework in mind, you're correct, Commissioner Gelfel, but I can see where you got confused based on the public comment, is the 11 or 12 month period to process Congregation for the Homeless's conditional use permit for the men's shelter in Eastgate took approximately 11 or 12 months from notice of application to the final hearing examiner decision. However, as Nick mentioned, there was pre-development services work that the applicant did with city staff. And I believe the commenter was referring to the pre-development services work plus the enhanced CUP process taking 17 months total. And I do want to also just make sure that the commission understands there's no bright line time period for a discretionary land use decision. There's a lot of different factors that go into that, including the amount of public comment. Obviously, it could be appealed. That's a process one land use code decision that could be appealed to the city council as well. So for the only low barrier men's homeless shelter on the east side, which is Congregation for the Homeless's shelter that was permitted last November, I believe, from notice of application to the actual issuance of the hearing examiner's decision becoming final, that was 11 or 12 months, but there certainly was some pre-development services application requirements on the applicant before then as well, too. So it's not a bright line rule, but that's the best reference point that we have in the city. And Congregation for the Homeless knows that timeline very well because they went through the permitting process.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks for making that. So to answer your second question, and just because it's been a moment, you're wondering if there is any other controls for intensity of use beyond this bedroom limit? So the supportive housing, you might remember the exemptions that were set up in that chapter. Some exemptions applied to those with less than 25% of the floor area dedicated to services, ones that don't have any on-site services, and ones that needed confidentiality. So those were really set up to control for intensity of use in a slightly different way, in that the less intense uses are not going to be subject to any registration requirement. Those are just going to be treated like any single family home. The bedroom limit, however, as drafted right now, would apply to even those exempt uses. And so that's really a matter of controlling for intensity for everything in single family zones. The residential character section that you noted is less of a intensity control and more just a design control, just to make sure the design is compatible, that there's not a large commercial looking building in a single family neighborhood, or so to speak. So the intensity has been taken into account with those exemptions. While a six bedroom limit would certainly be a way to do that, I would just go back to our staff recommendation that this is not something that we use to control for intensity of any other residential use. A house could have 12 bedrooms and each of them are occupied. So it's not consistent with how we would treat residential uses, and that's why we're not recommending it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you both, Caleb and Matt. Thank you, Commissioner Gopal. Commissioner Mugavkar.
I don't have any questions at this time. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to once again reiterate, it's really great that we're debating this so carefully and really looking at ways that we can encourage affordable housing, creating supportive housing, and ensure that people have shelter. This is one of the most expensive cities in the country, and it has been an ongoing crisis, and I think we're all safer when we all have shelter. And I understand the concerns of many of the public speakers and people on this commission and people in the council. And I just want to continue to reiterate that having affordable housing, having supportive housing, having transitional housing, having all aspects of housing in our city really does make us all safer. I don't have a question about that. It was just more of a comment, but I really appreciate all of your hard work and all of your efforts to try to align the RCWs with our own land use code and with the needs of our community. And I just appreciate your efforts. That's all.
Thank you, Commissioner Brown. Commissioner Bargavo.
Yeah, thanks. First of all, I want to start by just saying thanks for the presentation and also for catching me up on a separate session on the details of the Planning Commission meeting that I missed, where the LUCA was discussed and assessed for various puts and takes. So thank you to Caleb and city staff in general, Trisna. I have a couple of questions that I wanted to just get better clarity on. And I agree with Commissioner Brown that it's really important that we create an opportunity for everyone within the community to have a safe, secure place to stay. and it creates a better community. And you know, part of public policy and planning is to provide a normative stance on what we need to do to support everyone. That said, this is one where we have received tremendous amount of public testimony, written as well as oral, on the concerns on safety and security. And whether it's true or perceived, grounded in fact or perception, it needs to be addressed, and that's part of the process. Some of the discussions that happened in the prior meeting pulled in measures, for the lack of a better word, such as a safety and security plan, a code of conduct, standard operating procedures from homeless services into what is part of, supportive housing. And the reason why city staff is not supportive is because they don't comply with other uses within the same residential types that we're trying to place these, facilities in. However, to address the concerns of safety and security and the perception within the community and respond to the feedback, those measures were pulled in and assessed. But what I'm not clear, I'm getting to my question, really long-winded way of getting there, so bear with me, is that those services and those elements actually have, when you do them as part of the homeless services, potentially some way to manage or enforce the impact of those. And I brought this up in my prior review as well with city staff. As noted, I am not clear when a safety and security plan is submitted as part of the application or a standard operating procedure pamphlet is submitted as part of the application, what happens post-implementation? Is there any way to regulate? And I think I know the answer, but I'm trying to bring this up to the larger commission to better understand perspective and also bring my own view, that there is limited ways to manage that. So what is the value? Because when you pull them from homeless services, you would have a good neighbor agreement that would be in place that would help manage that and address that. In this case, what would those measures really do? I'd love to hear city's perspective, staff's perspective on that.
Yep, thanks for your question. So the additional submittal requirements that have been proposed are really meant to just foster transparency between the supportive housing operator, the city, and the neighbors. These are all things that would be submitted to the city upon registration of the supportive housing use. And would be available for the community to view following the public notice. You are correct that it is a bit of a challenge to actually address a lot of these concerns, especially through the land use code. However, we do have staff and protocols in place that, while they wouldn't necessarily manage the safety and security plan, many elements of that plan would be taken care of by the Bellevue Police Department, should an emergency happen, a fire or the fire department or anything like that. We also have code enforcement staff who are available for any nuisance violations, property maintenance concerns, and so on. So while yes, the way it's set up, it doesn't give us a lot of control over the management of the operation, we do have ways to control for negative impacts that may come up. These additional submittal measures are really, as I said, just meant to foster transparency. You also asked about how these are regulated or how these are controlled with homeless services uses. This is one where the Bellevue Police Department actually reviews and approves the safety and security plan. And they're also pretty involved with the Good Neighbor Agreement Advisory Committee. So there's already a plan in place for shelters and other homeless services uses where the provider is has a contact with the Bellevue Police Department and vice versa to notify them of any situations that are happening. So it's a little bit different. We did not propose the same level with that. As I noted, as Nick mentioned, there just haven't been violations for the existing supportive housing uses in Bellevue that staff feel would merit this additional level of review by the Bellevue Police Department.
Okay, just to follow, actually, before I get to my second question, just to follow up on what you responded, what fundamentally, if any, is the difference between the existing supportive housing and what this LUCA would bring about?
This LUCA would establish a registration program for more intensive supportive housing uses, whereas right now they are just permitted outright without any additional requirements. So that would be the main difference. There's just no code provisions currently for supportive housing in the land use code. So we've tried to insert them responding to House Bill 1220 and the RCW, while also fitting them into the framework of the land use code.
Got it. So the increased intensity is what probably is at the heart of the concerns that we've heard in the public testimony, as well as the need to have a different approach than we have taken with prior supportive housing. Would that be a fair assertion?
I can't confirm the second part of that, but safety and security, and it was certainly a large portion of the comments we've heard so far.
Okay, no, that's my own interpretation at least, so I appreciate that. Second question, the community meeting aspect of this, what would be the intent of a community meeting like this? Would it be just transparency, because there is no like a good neighbor agreement in place that would be sort of, you know, ratified in this process in any way? This would just be a informational session for residents and property, like nearby property owners, etc.
That's correct. The way it's written, it would be just an informational meeting, really intended to just facilitate a dialogue between neighbors and the operator.
Got it. Last question, if I can, Chair, otherwise I can wait.
No, please go ahead.
Okay, this review of the safety and security plan with the police department, which it seems from your earlier response, would be the agency responsible anyway to manage any issues that come up. How onerous is that process? And I know I'm asking for opinion.
I can't say from my end that I would know that for sure. Maybe Nick has some history with Bellevue Police reviewing. It would add process. We haven't worked out the exact details of how it would work. I can't say on exact timing, but it would certainly add some process time.
Yeah, and Commissioner Bhargava, certainly, as you can imagine, anytime you add an additional reviewer to a project, you are going to have additional time kind of included with that review. And the current approach, as we've noted, would be to allow these as permitted uses outright. Adding an additional process step to review a plan would require us to think a little differently on how we want to intake that application and what the time associated with that intake would look like. Just to go back to why that was not recommended by staff was we don't have a really strong basis based on our experience with these types of uses to feel that would be a necessary step in the process. But certainly we've brought these modifications for the Planning Commission to review and make decisions on. So that is definitely within your function if you choose to add in that potential modification to the draft LUCA.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bhargava. Vice Chair Ferry.
Thank you. This is our fifth session, and I have to say that every single session I've learned more, and I've had the chance to spend time with staff as well, and every single time I get to spend time with you all, I learn something new. And I also have to apologize, because it wasn't until very recently, just this last week, that I understood the clear distinction that you made tonight about the CUP process is really intended only for the transient homeless shelter. So all that said, I 100% agree with all of your recommendations that you bring forward tonight, with Honestly, the only exception is that CUP requirement for the transient use. And I've really wrestled with this, just like all of us have. We totally understand the concerns that the citizens have in the community. But I also think about if we put obstacles in the way, and I don't think any of us think any differently, that CUP process is an obstacle, and there's no guarantee that it's going to even be approved after the whole process takes place. But if we do put those obstacles in place and we are lacking those facilities, I don't think we're any safer. In fact, I think we're less safe because those very people that could use those services are going to be out in the streets or in our parks. And I just think that we need to do everything we possibly can to encourage the building of those facilities. I also question whether, you stated very clearly in the code that we cannot prohibit the siting of those facilities. And while the CUP isn't prohibiting it per se, it certainly will slow it down and in many cases might prohibit it based on, again, input from the citizens. So again, I support all of your recommendations other than the CUP requirements for the transient homelessness. So, but thank you for your work.
Thank you, Vice Chair Ferris. Let's just go around the room one more time. This time, if you have anything to add or have a question, please raise your hand. And if I'm blind, if you use the virtual one, use the real one. I see Commissioner Mugavkar.
Yeah, so I missed the last commission meeting when this was discussed, but I continue to be concerned that while as a planning commission, I think most of us agree with these recommendations, we are not bringing a vast majority of the public along with what this is, and that this is an ongoing issue, an ongoing problem. We know affordable housing, homelessness, all of these things are not going to be solved very quickly. So I have said this a lot and I will continue to say it. We need to find a better way to engage the public, make them feel heard and address their concerns. I think make these programs successful long term. But that being said, I do support this moving forward and I believe it's what the city should do. But it does I'm constantly amazed with the conversations I have with my friends and neighbors who are all very concerned about these things and they are all very good people and they just feel like their voices aren't heard and that their safety concerns are dismissed. And so I just want to state that. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Morso.
Thanks, Chair. I was wondering if I should make my raised hand symbol lighter. I concur with whatever Commissioner Brown and Commissioner Vishal said about what we've heard from the public about the safety aspect that this brings forward. The safety and the security along with the CPU were the two items that kind of gave me pause when I saw these spreadsheets that the staff put together. And I just want to clarify something that I think I've heard from Commissioner Bogava's question about once you do have the safety and security plan as we call for with homeless services use, how does that get implemented? Who has the authority to ensure it gets implemented? And if it doesn't, what happens next? And what I heard is it's about transparency, which is great. It's about good neighbor, which is fantastic. But at the end of the day, is it really about safety and security? And if there's no entity responsible for ensuring that is being implemented properly, what is the point of making that prerequisite for application? Because my understanding is no one is trying to get it implemented. There's no authority to make it happen. And I would imagine the Bellevue Police Department
has their own idea, has their own rules about how to ensure the safety and security of our community. And even if an organization outside of BPD puts a safety and security plan together, I would imagine that whatever the BPD has in-house would be prioritized over what this organization puts together. So I just want to make sure that this is the point that I heard, that I want to clarify that. If that is the case, as much as I think it'd be great to have something in place from the entity putting this together, if there's no way to enforce it, it's just a red tape in the process. As much as I want to ensure the safety and the security of our community, because I do think it's a priority, it needs to be addressed, but we need to do it right. So that being said, I recommend everything that staff has proposed tonight, even the items that staff recommend not to support because of the reasons it mentioned, and to have this being moved forward so we can really tackle the issue of affordable housing and homelessness. Because in reality, this is a drop in the bucket. And if we put more red tape in the process, that's going to make it even a lesser drop in the bucket to address the problem that we have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Nick and Caleb, please respond, and then I will say something, and then I go to Commissioner Bhargava and Commissioner Gopal. But Nick and Caleb, can you clarify what Commissioner Mourceau just asked?
Yes, appreciate your questions and comments. You are correct in your understanding that the safety and security plan in the context of supportive housing in this LUCA, the city wouldn't have a good enforcement mechanism of that plan specifically. It would be just to show that the provider has been thinking about safety and security, that they have plans in place to implement it. But in terms of city enforcement, as I noted, we do have the police department in place to, and the fire department and others, to address emergencies and other situations that may arise, as well as code enforcement for any property maintenance or nuisance issues. So while it wouldn't necessarily address specifically the safety and security plan, there are mechanisms in place to ensure public safety more generally.
Commissioner Mourceau, did you get the answer that you wanted or you were looking for?
Thank you, Caleb, and thank you, Chair.
So before I go to Commissioner Bhargava and Commissioner Gopal, I think we should just reiterate that we need to recommend to City Council, and there are some items that we already approved. There are four items that we need to vote on, that if we do agree with City of Staff recommendation or if we do not agree with City of Staff recommendation. So item 3B, item 4B, item 7, item 9, are those items that we need to review as a whole group and make our recommendation solid for City Council. So by saying that, Commissioner Bhargava, we go start from you, and then we go to Commissioner Gopal, and then we go to each items, and we will check what the commissioner are thinking about those items.
Okay, thanks, Chair. One of my questions is going to be process, which you just addressed, because I wasn't clear how we're thinking about this line item.
I read your mind.
Yeah, did a great job. And then, you know, obviously, when I got a chance to sort of talk with staff in sort of the catch-up session I had one-on-one, one of my concerns was the lack of, like, mechanisms for implementation and how this can become more a submittal rather than a true way to sort of address the concerns we've heard. Like, adding to the requirements of what you need to submit to actually operate doesn't mean you're actually going to address the concerns, and which is kind of where, you know, I felt we were lacking then.
And so if you are truly to include a safety and security plan, which seems we were supportive of in the prior session, like my recommendation is to then to bring it, though it sounds like more bureaucracy, to bring in the police department to validate this, because we have no other enforcement mechanisms. So otherwise it can be a template of a safety and security plan that's submitted that may or may not address the specific needs of that particular site or context. So that allows us then to build in those provisions that address that we have loudly heard from the residents. And you know, again, I say that based on ground truth or perception, the concerns we've heard. And so building something that will truly allow us to address them in a way that has an impact, I think I'm for that, despite the additional burden that builds on both the police department as well as the applicant, which, you know, if you're doing that, then let's do it in a way that adds value, is my point of view. So really not a question, but more a comment.
Thank you. Commissioner Gopal.
Yeah, I was just gonna speak on one of the elements here, one of the modifications that relates to the conditional use permit for homeless services uses. And I think it's a really important thing to maintain in this proposed LUCA, just in recognition of the intensity of the usage associated with, you know, the homeless services uses as opposed to supportive housing. And I think, you know, given, you know, what happened with the Congregations for Homeless, you know, facility that was approved by a hearing examiner back in November of 2021. I mean, I think if you read that hearing examiner's decision, it was a very thoughtful, you know, consideration, and the Congregations for Homelessness did a great job, you know, in terms of their submissions. And I think that that's an example of the kind of accountability that, you know, citizens are looking for, to ensure that, you know, operators are going to be careful and thoughtful with respect to impacts. And there was no appeal in that case, and that's moving forward. And I think that I think it's important, if we're going to look at the long-term interests of Bellevue and trying to ensure that we have these kinds of locations that are going to be, you know, included in the community, that we go through a careful process. And democracy is messy and it takes more time, but I think ultimately the results of it are a good thing. And so I would strongly urge us to, you know, follow the staff's recommendation and maintain the conditional use permit for what's a more intensive usage and deserves some more, you know, procedural protections, just to make sure that, you know, the community feels assured that accountability will take place. And that's it.
Thank you. Anyone else wants to say the last thing? Raise your hand. Otherwise, I will go to item 3B of the list. Commissioner Gopal, your hand is already raised. It is from the previous one. Perfect. Okay, let me see. Yes.
Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to put the list of modifications.
I was going to ask you. Now you read my mind. Look at that. We have been working so long together. So let's just see what everyone is thinking about item 3B, that is kind of what Commissioner Gopal was talking about, the permitted use in hotel motel district for emergency housing. City staff, kind of are going with conditional permit use. That's the recommendation. And what is your thought? And I think I should go around the room and ask and just tell me, are you voting with city staff that we should have the conditional permit use, or you are opposed to that?
Chair Balakuchin?
Yes.
If I may, I'm wondering
did you raise your hand again, I didn't see?
No, Chair.
Oh, okay, good.
Thank you for checking. I'm wondering if that may be more useful to bring the attachment C instead of this list, as the attachment C provide more context into staff's position and also context into whether the commission asked for it to be brought back, whether it was already supported by the commission.
So I think you are right. The TBD here in the screen is that's what you're talking about later. But I think, yes, you are right. They have more content on the explanation. So if they can share that, I have it in front of me, but if the staff can share that, Caleb would be better. So perfect. Thank you, Commissioner Morso, for the recommendation. So back to the 3B Commissioner Bargava. I saw that hand. You're mute.
Just a request to zoom in a little bit on the video.
That works for everyone.
3B.
Thank you.
So I think you should say, do you support city staff or not support? And if you supporting city staff, mean conditional permit. If you are not supporting, means you the permitted use. So Commissioner Brown?
I support the recommendations as made by staff.
Perfect. Vice Chair Ferries?
Sorry, I want to get a little clarity because earlier you were talking about, I thought you said CUP. This is not talking about the CUP, correct?
Sorry, what is the question again?
So I'm just trying to make sure that I'm voting on the right thing because I've gotten this in the past. Earlier when you're describing this, you used the term CUP because as I've described in my testimony, I do not want us to require a CUP for the transient homeless services. If that's not this, because I wasn't clear on what this is, then I would support staff on 3B. Caleb, can you help me here?
So 3B, what it says is that the emergency housing would be permitted in hotel motel districts, so no CUP requirement. And what staff is saying is we do not recommend that approach or that modification. So this is in line. You would not want to support staff recommendation based on your earlier testimony.
Thank you very much.
That's a CUP, and you are not aligned, I think. Am I right?
That's correct. I don't.
So you are not supporting that, Commissioner Brown, supporting the city staff. Vice Chair is not supporting. Commissioner Gopal?
I'm supporting the staff position, which is to require a CUP.
Great. Commissioner Mugafkar?
It's a hard one for me because I want to speed things up, but I feel like that's in direct contradiction to what we've been hearing from the community. So I will support this recommendation, though it's painful.
Thank you. Commissioner Bargava?
Support.
Commissioner Mursa?
Support staff recommendation and plus one as Commissioner Mukafwa, as painful as this is.
Perfect. So I think I also support the city staff. So I think item 3B got the majority support. So that 3B I think we are aligned with city staff's recommendation to not recommend permitted use in hotel model district. It's so negative and negative. And I think the next item that we need to talk about is 4B. So safety and security plan that needs required PBD to review and approval. So let's just again tell us that, again, city staff are not recommending that. So are you supporting city staff recommendation or you are not supporting the city staff recommendation? Commissioner Gopal, I start with you.
You're on mute, Creighton.
I support the staff recommendation on this, not to add this as additional requirement.
Commissioner Brown?
I too support the staff recommendation that it would slow things down.
Commissioner Weiser,
I support staff.
Commissioner Mugavkar?
Again, painful, but I feel like the community has spoken, so I cannot support this recommendation.
Commissioner Bargava?
Based on my prior comments, not surprising, I don't support.
And Commissioner Morso?
I support staff's recommendation.
I also support the staff recommendation. So I think Vice Chair and I think Commissioner Bargava and Mugavkar are no support, but the rest of us are supporting city staff. So I think 4B is done. Majority are supporting city staff recommendation. Let's go to number 7, community meeting. Again, city staff are not recommending that. So please tell us that if you support city staff by not recommending that, or you are against and not supporting. Commissioner Morso?
I support staff's recommendation.
Commissioner Bargava?
Don't support staff's recommendation.
Don't support. Commissioner Mugavkar?
Don't support it.
Don't support. Commissioner Gopal?
I support staff's recommendation.
Vice Chair Ferris?
I support staff.
And Commissioner Brown?
I do, this number 7, I do support the staff's recommendation.
Yes, number 7.
Yep, I support it.
And I do not support, but I think we have 4 supports and 3 do not supports, including me, Commissioner Bargava, Commissioner Mugavkar, but the rest of the commissioner support city of the staff. I think therefore, again, the city of staff got the majority of our commissioner votes. So that's done. The last one is...
Chair Malakuchin, before you move on.
Yeah.
May I clarify, this is saying we're not requiring a community meeting before, prior to opening, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. The last one is the maximum bedroom. There is a limitation of 6 bedrooms. And city staff, again, based on their based on their whole mental model of looking at this as a residential, so they are not recommending that. So please tell us what you think. Commissioner Brown, do you support or you don't support?
I support the staff's recommendation of no limits.
Vice Chair Ferris?
Support staff recommendation.
Commissioner Gopal?
I've thought a lot about this, but I think the combination of the staff's presentation tonight, plus the public comment. I'll support the staff's recommendation as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Mugavkar.
I support the staff recommendation on this one.
Commissioner Bargava.
I also support.
Commissioner Murso.
I support it.
Oh my God, we all agree. I support too. That's awesome. This is a small victory that we need to all celebrate. So I think what we have, I think we are recommending that we this, including this, yeah.
Chair Malakuchin, I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no worries.
I noticed that Caleb took the list out. I feel like 4A and 4B may be somewhat connected in light of the conversations that we've had tonight. And I know your vote was for 4B. Did we also vote on 4A and I just don't remember it?
Yeah, 4A has been supported with the on February 23rd meeting. We all voted and we all asked city staff to included that in the package.
Okay, so the commission is not going with staff's recommendation on 4A because the commission's position in previous meeting, I guess that I have missed, was okay.
Yeah, and this the same as number 5, the same as number 6. That's why we didn't talk about them. So we already we had the majority vote on those items that you already see here, supported or not supported. We already voted. The items that you see as a bring back is the items, they are the items that we needed to have a bigger group to have a better vote on them.
Thank you for the clarification, Chair.
Of course. Nick, Caleb, based on what you heard, I don't know what else do you want. We are recommending this proposal to City Council by the additional of some of the items that you did not recommend, that we saying we are recommending, and some of them that we are agreeing with you for not adding to this LUCA. Do you need us to make a motion?
So Chair Malakuchin, if the commission is happy with the list of all the supported items from the prior meeting, as well as all the direction that was provided today, then I think we have what we need to have this recommendation move forward to council. But just want to make sure that the list that was provided with all the prior items that were supported are still supported, and then all the discussion today would be included with this draft as well.
That's correct.
I do believe we may need a motion to vote on this. We can ask Matt to confirm, but I do think we may need to vote on it and maybe say as amended by the discussion from attachment C.
That's correct. So I'd like to make 2 points. Even though a quorum was present at the last meeting and the commission reviewed those items, if a majority of the commission wants to revisit those items tonight, they certainly can. So I want to make that point first. We haven't provided a recommendation to the council yet, right? But Commissioner Morrison was correctly stating what's necessary procedurally as modified through this most recent discussion. And if everyone's fine with all of the support that the chair just went through very efficiently, then we need a formal motion in order to make sure that the LUCA as modified is the recommendation to the city council. So those are the 2 points based on the discussion that I'm hearing. I just want to make sure everybody's clear about.
Great. Why should Ferry first you go and then we go to Commissioner Gopal?
Okay, I just want it for the record. I would have changed my vote to go along with all staff recommendations other than the CUP. So just saying that for the record.
Commissioner Gopal.
I'm happy to try to make a motion if that would be helpful on this. And I want to make the motion based upon adoption of the modifications, because it's a little bit confusing to go back and forth with saying, you know, did staff recommend it or not? So the motion that I would make would be to adopt modifications 1, 2, 4A, 5, and 6 as set forth on attachment C, provided by the planning staff.
So like, hold on, Commissioner Morso, I think your hand is up. Is it from the previous one or is it the new one? New one, perfect.
It's
go ahead.
New one, yeah.
Go ahead.
And my question might be relevant ahead of the motion that Commissioner Gopal kindly put on the table, which, by the way, I think needs clarification for me anyway. I'm curious how after hearing the conversation tonight, the safety and security plan, after hearing Commissioner Ferris's position, I'm curious if the commission would be open to having a vote like we did on all the others, but on 4A or anything else that the position that the commission may feel may need to be brought back to the table, but specifically for me, 4A, because I'm curious.
Yeah, that's the question. Again, I think my personal opinion is what we voted already. We should not revisit it again. But Vice Chair Ferris suggested that, and we want to respect her, and also Commissioner Morso bring that up. So should we, and if we are doing that, we should do from one. We should go what we did for 3B, 4B, 7, and 9. We should do that again for 1, 2, 3, the rest of them. Should we do that? What everyone prefer? Do we have the majority of votes to revisit what we did on February 23rd?
I mean, I can give you my opinion, but I think it's only probably needed to revisit the ones where there might be ambiguity or folks have concern. Otherwise, we don't need to go through the whole list.
Commissioner Gopal?
Yeah, I'm happy to withdraw my motion, you know, just so we can have that discussion, you know, and then we can craft a better motion after we have that discussion.
Vice Chair Ferris, thank you, Commissioner Gopal.
I would love to have us just reconsider 4A, 5, and 6. Just to do a quick vote like we did before.
Commissioner Mogafor, did you raise your hand?
No, but since you called on me, I would say I would like to move forward. Like, I feel like we've gone round and round, and I'd like to go forward. So a quick vote, I get it, but I don't really want to spend it. I think we've all had enough opportunity to consider and make decisions, and we need to move it forward. So,
okay, so let's just do this. Let's just do a vote on should we revisit those that we already voted on February 23rd, and I go around the room. Tell me if you wanted to revisit or if you don't want to revisit. And if the majority said we are going to revisit, we are going to revisit item 4A, 5, and 6. Vice Chair, I start with you because I know your answer. You want to revisit. Am I right? Okay. Commissioner Brown?
No.
Commissioner Mogafkar, your answer is no, I assume.
No.
Commissioner Gopal?
No.
Commissioner Morso?
Yes, please.
And Commissioner Bargava?
Yes.
So I think we have 3 yes, 3 no. Am I right?
It's all up to you, Mahan.
You have not voted yet.
Yes, so far. I would go also for no. So we are not going to revisit older that we already revisited. So I think now, Commissioner Gopal, I think you can put a motion on recommending the City Council this LUCA by what we decided in this meeting and the previous meeting.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and try and restate. So the motion is to adopt the LUCA with modifications 1, 2, 4A, 5, and 6 as listed in Attachment C as presented by the Planning Commission staff.
So we have a motion on the table that I cannot repeat.
I second the motion.
It is moved by Commissioner Gopal and seconded by Commissioner Mo Gavkar. Is there any discussion?
Just a clarification. I heard Commissioner Gopal says 4A and not 4B, so we are not adding those in the motion because the majority of us have voted not to move forward with them. So that's why they're not in the motion, right?
That was
Commissioner Gopal?
That was the intent, yes.
That was the intent, yeah.
Okay, makes sense to me.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All approved, say yes.
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 Aye.
All opposed, say no. Any abstain? So I assume we all voted yes to move forward this LUCA to City Council. Nick, Caleb, the biggest possible thank you that you can imagine to you all. You gracefully handled us, listened to us, took our recommendation, listened to public several times, went back and came back, and we really, really, really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you all for the good discussion and direction.
Yes, thank you.
So, Don, what is next? Is it approval of the minutes, Tara? I think so, am I right?
I believe what's next is approval of minutes.
Perfect. Can I get a motion to approve the meeting minutes of March
20? Sorry, Chair. Sorry. I'm sorry. It's actually other business before approval of minutes.
Other business. Do we have anything for other businesses?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
I'd like to address some of comments that were made during the public comment where my name was mentioned. With respect to the current discussion that the council is having on allowing potential remote participation by commissioners, I just want to make clear that myself and all the other commissioners that were present before COVID, when we signed up to be commissioners, we knew that it was in person and we all showed up in person. So my comment was related to the fact that this is a new environment that we are dealing with COVID. And my expectation is that the conversation that the council is having is not to have a hybrid model permanently, I was mentioned, but as we're dealing with this new COVID environment within that timeline. The other thing also, again, I am asking for a hybrid model, not keeping up with the only virtual option. And also the point that I was also highlighting is having the commissioners be part of the conversation as a decision that's impacting us and the public is being made, I think would be useful for us and the public to be part of the conversation. And then also, technology now has allowed us to do a lot of things. I mean, we've seen it through COVID, and that also includes that even if someone is participating remotely and there are other folks present in the room, I have been in meetings where there's camera in the room. So if there's reaction from the public, the person remotely can still see if someone is supporting a decision, a motion, or whatever it is. So I just want to highlight that. And also, lastly, is this having a potential remote participation option will be good for the community, not just the commissioners, the council, because I can tell you, if I'm driving, if I'm a member of the community and there's a meeting, I can be driving my kids to school and still be listening to a meeting. So those are the points that I wanted to clarify and respond to the comments that were made earlier and addressed to me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Morisseau. Commissioner Brown.
I just want to appreciate Commissioner Morisseau's comments. I didn't say anything at the time, but I also have an autoimmune disorder that would make me particularly susceptible to COVID. I appreciate the opportunity to participate and engage in community discussions on this commission and, you know, shape the future of our community without jeopardizing my health and the health of our community. So, a hybrid option would certainly be appreciated. Of course, I would, you know, take precautions if we had to do it in person, I would do so, but I don't think it's necessary to jeopardize our health. And it is a new environment in the post-COVID world. So, and I really appreciate your statement, and I support it.
Thank you so much. Anything under other businesses or other business, I guess? Okay, perfect. Can I get a motion to approve the meeting minutes of March 23rd, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
It is moved by Commissioner Morisseau and seconded by Commissioner Brown to approve the minutes of March 23rd, 2022. Is there any discussion? All approved, say yes.
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 Aye. Yes.
Yes.
All opposed say no. Any abstain? We approve the minutes. Continue the oral communication. We have now 15 minutes. Speaker can be allowed to speak for 3 minutes. Tara will call on the speakers who use the raise hand function and show to us that they wanted to talk to us. So Tara, please bring your clock and let the first person to speak.
Apologies. I believe, did that in the reverse order. Sorry about that. My computer is not cooperating.
I believe it's time for a new computer, Tara. Ask the city, ask the city mayor, I don't know.
Yeah. I believe we have one speaker with a hand raised. So Patty, I'm gonna enable you to speak. And again, please note you have 3 minutes.
Okay, but it seems like I'm the only one, so I should be able to get all 15 minutes, right? Are there other people?
We allow each speaker 3 minutes during each block of oral communication.
Okay. So there's not enough time, but first I just want to thank Ms. Commissioner Vishal and Commissioner Radhika, I think it was her name. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Oh, okay. I just want to thank Commissioner Vishal and Commissioner Radhika for taking into consideration the public opinion. It was very clear to me during the times that you guys spoke that you definitely are very concerned with the public opinion against homeless shelters in the middle of residential area because they are extremely dangerous for children and elderly especially. So I thank you very much. Second, I would like to say that I obviously joined the wrong meeting because I can see that this group is mainly in charge of implementing this mandate from King County. And my hope was actually that this meeting was to debate the mandate. But as I can now understand, you are simply trying to proceed with the implementation. I also want to say that it is extremely concerning that there was absolutely no transparency in this process. I surveyed my neighborhood. Nobody was aware of these discussions about the homeless shelters in the middle of residential areas. So, and including me, so I just became aware of this. That's why I joined. This is the first time I joined. I was not aware that there had been other meetings. I think the majority of Bellevue residents are not aware. So there are a lot of things that I would like to say before my time is over. But one thing I want to say is this. I hear about this mandate that we have to have the homeless shelters. We have to have the homeless shelters. I would like to request medical documentation from psychiatrists, psychologists, neuroscientists, sociologists, backing up this mandate that we have to have these shelters in residential areas with proximity to children and elderly. When we know that most of the homeless, many of them are either drug addicts or alcoholics, and some even criminals. So why aren't we putting in place measures to protect the people from these people that need help? I would like to see help for them, but it doesn't have to be at the expense of the safety of us. They probably need help in a medical facility. It doesn't have to be in the middle of residential areas. Hopefully your decisions, your recommendations will not have sad consequences. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. And this makes me to go back to Commissioner Mugavkar comment. We need to bring the public line, as I said that several times, Commissioner Mugavkar and others said that, and we need to make it completely clear that, for example, we don't have homeless shelter in the residential. Those homeless shelter is going to be in the area that the hotel and motel are permitted. But we need to do this, make it more clear for everyone. Vice Chair Ferry said she has been in these meetings and she's learning everything, every new item in every meeting. Great. I wanted to skip executive session, but I'm going to say it because Commissioner Morso may stop me. Executive session, do we have anything for that? Great. Can I get with that, Matt? Oh, Matt.
I was confirming we don't have an executive session.
Commissioner Gopal brought you twice in this meeting, and I don't know why he does that. You know, whenever you come on the screen, the trauma on my heart is a lot. So Commissioner Gopal, I really asked him to not bring Matt to the, whenever he turns on the screen, he's like, I feel nervous.
Lawyers have that effect on people, Matt.
Yeah, I fear we have too many attorneys in these planning commission meetings nowadays. So.
Yeah, they like each other. They want every, yeah, great.
Because I feel like I'm the opposite. I feel like I need Matt in the room because I just get in trouble, so I need someone too.
I definitely want him in the room. I just don't want him to turn on his video.
Well,
a guilty conscience somehow, I think, with Mo.
And all fantastic questions, not from Commissioner Gopal, but from all of the commissioners. Just really, I think Commissioner Ferris's point was really well taken, that you spend enough time with this where you're really seeing the issues well at this point. And that's good public service and a good job as a board and commission as well, too.
And I was joking. I appreciate you, Matt, and I appreciate all of the questions. Commissioner Gopal, for sure, is one of the best additions we had in this commission. So can I get a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Move that we adjourn.
It is moved by Commissioner Brown and seconded by Commissioner Morso to adjourn the meeting. Is there any discussion? All of us say yes.
Yes.
All of us say no. There is no, any abstain. It was great seeing you. Thank you so much. Hopefully I see you again very soon. Have a great night.
Bye all.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.